informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Iraqi insurgents hiding in a date palm grove shot down a Chinook helicopter carrying dozens of soldiers heading for home leave Sunday, killing 16 and wounding 20 in the deadliest strike against U.S. forces since they invaded Iraq in March. Three other Americans were killed in separate attacks Sunday, including one 1st Armored Division soldier in Baghdad and two U.S. civilians working for the Army Corps of Engineers in Fallujah. All three were victims of roadside bombs, the military said. Sunday's death toll was the highest for American troops since March 23rd, and the attack represented a major escalation against the U.S.-led coalition. President Bush refused to personally comment on the attacks. He spent the day out of public view, a down day between fundraising appearances Saturday and Monday. President Bush is losing public support for his war and economic policies, according to a new poll, which for the first time shows that a majority of Americans disapprove of his handling of Iraq. A slim majority, 51%, disapprove of his Iraq policy, while 47% approve, according to the ABC News Washington Post poll released Sunday. Most Americans, 54%, continue to believe that the Iraq war was worth fighting, but that's down from 70% in April. A new high, 62%, say the level of U.S. casualties is unacceptable. Fewer than 1 in 10 Americans say Bush has made the nation more prosperous, while 58%, a new high, say the president fails to understand their problems. Saddam Hussein refused to order a counterattack against U.S. troops in March because he was convinced that he could avoid or survive a land invasion, according to former Deputy Prime Minister Tariq Aziz. He also said Iraq did not possess chemical, biological, or nuclear weapons on the eve of the war, a prime justification for a U.S. invasion of Iraq. More after this.
Military veterans deserve better. They must wait endlessly for basic health care from the Department of Veterans Affairs. If you or a military veteran you know is one of the many heroes waiting for VA health care, the American Legion wants to tell your story to your elected officials in Washington, D.C. Call toll-free 1-866-539-2509 or visit www.legion.org today. The number again, 1-866-539-2509. We'll tell your story where it matters.
A Polish undertaker was caught with his hearse packed with illegal cigarettes on Friday, Polish customs officers said. According to the report, a Pole from a local funeral firm was returning from neighboring Ukraine, where he said he had taken a cadaver. But customs officers searched the vehicle and found 3,200 cigarette packs hidden in secret compartments in the hearse. Gives a whole new meaning to the term coffin nails. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Does Burger King have a new fire-grilled chicken baguette sandwich waiting for you? Unfortunately, no. Each one is freshly made to order without waiting for anyone. Like our Santa Fe chicken baguette with juicy fire-grilled chicken, fire-roasted peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on the fresh-baked baguette, all with only 5 grams of fat. Order your own Santa Fe chicken baguette from Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
Remember the glorious promises of globalization? CEOs, politicians of both parties, and media pundits all joined in the hallelujah chorus to proclaim that corporate-driven, laissez-faire globalization was the answer for all the world's ills. If only all the nations, especially those with rich resources to exploit, would open up to foreign ownership, forego government regulation of business, accept the stringent financial medicine of the IMF and World Bank, and privatize their economies, then the omniscient power of the global marketplace would shine its radiant light everywhere, and even the poorest villager would own a Lexus. It was, of course, a bottle of global snake oil, sold by the flimflammers of the prosperous world and willingly swallowed by get-rich-quick rulers of the third world. Bolivia offers a peek at reality. 20 years ago, the elite corporate-oriented leaders of this poor South American nation rushed to the promises of the flimflammers, led by the U.S. They sold off the nation's public assets, opened their arms wide to foreign investors, and waited for prosperity to flow. 20 years later, unemployment is rampant, economic growth is in the ditch, and there's now more poverty than before the magic of globalization was waved into the country, leaving Bolivians as the poorest people in South America, with a per capita income of under $950 a year. Unsurprisingly, the people of Bolivia are now in open revolt, not merely against their U.S.-hugging millionaire president whom they have now booted from office, but especially against the exploitative policies of corporate globalization, and specifically against U.S. corporations that are in league with the elites. This is Jim Hightower saying, people worldwide are learning the hard way that globalization is just another word for economic exploitation and corporate domination, and are refusing to swallow any more of the global owner.
The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in the American way. This is Tom Hartman broadcasting live from coast to coast, border to border on the IE America Radio Network. Also broadcasting on the Sirius satellite radio system and on several internet stations, radiopower.org, live365.com, and ieamericaradio.com. Here it is, Monday, the third day of November of 2003, day 112. Day 112 since a senior administration official committed treason and shortly thereafter, our president said...
And I don't know if we're going to find out. The senior administration official... Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials.
Right, yeah. Day 112 in the search for the senior administration official. Day 267 in the search for weapons of mass destruction. And day 782 in the search for that man whose name shall not pass the lips of George W. Bush, also known as Osama bin Laden. Well, folks, what is the state of American democracy? We are living at such an edge point right now. It's interesting. Last night I gave a speech here in Vermont, over in Burlington, at the Unitarian Church, about the topic of a book I wrote called Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. And after the talk, there was a little Q&A session, and one of the people who had shown up, you know, raised his hand, and he said, you know, how can we, you know, these corporations are so large, and they have so much power, and they have taken captive our politicians. I mean, politicians can't get reelected without corporate money. You got a situation where Bloomberg spent $72 million to buy the mayorship of New York. His competitors spent $14 million. I mean, Bloomberg spent $99 a vote to become the mayor of New York City. And you've got this enormous corporate, you know, this juggernaut. And how can we, the people, do anything about it? And it caused me to recall that there were people who once said the exact same thing in 1773, 74, 75, 76, back at the time that this nation was founded. They said, oh, Britain is the greatest military power in the world. It's the greatest economic power in the world. The East India Company is invincible. We can't stop the East India Company. If they want to lobby the government of England, of the United Kingdom, to eliminate taxes on tea, as they did with the Tea Act of 1773, yes, it was a tax cut that led to the Boston Tea Party, not a tax increase. It was a tax cut that was going to allow the East India Company to pull a Walmart and undercut all of the small entrepreneurs who were running tea operations up and down the East Coast of America. That's what it was about. And there were people back in that time who said, oh, well, there's nothing we can do about this. But there were some who said, no, there is something we can do about it, because they were living at an edge time, a time of change and transition. And edges are extraordinary. Yeah, the greatest diversity happens at edges. If you look at like the edge where the ocean meets the shore, that's where you find some of the most extraordinary biodiversity. Is right there along the right there in those little tidal pools. If you look at water, if you look at little puddles of water after it's rained on the street, and they seem to shimmer with color, like little rainbows. That's an edge. It's a fractal pattern created by gasoline, your auto exhaust, oil, and water not mixing, but creating an edge. And it refracts light. It breaks apart the white light that strikes it into the rainbow. Edges are places where things happen. There's power in edges. Edges are the fulcrums, you know, the Archimedes. Give me a lever long enough and a pivot point, and I can move the world. That pivot point is the edge. Front lines in battle, the point of consumer and vendor in business, places of disagreement and difference between people, between cultures, between religions. Edges are dynamic, alive, and inherently unstable. That's the key to it. Some of you may have studied the history of Japan, the Meiji era, the period of Japanese feudalism. Japan had no edges at that point. They were just completely stable. You read about it in James Clavell's book, Gaijin. And then Admiral Perry showed up with his black ships and parked them off the coast of Japan and said, if you won't let us talk to you, if you won't let us trade with you, we're going to attack. He created an edge, and it transformed Japanese culture. There is just this extraordinary series of edges. And so here we are at another edge. And a little later on in the show, I want to get into the essence of the edge for democracy. What is the power of democracy? Did you know that there have been scientific studies that have been done that have demonstrated that two democratic nations have never gone to war with each other ever in the history of the world? That the natural tendency of animals is not dominance, but is democracy? We've talked about this, you know, briefly before, but I've got a neat little quote from Thomas Jefferson for you and some stuff from Immanuel Kant. At first, some of the edge stuff in the news today. Actually, this is from last week. There was an article in The Guardian. Christian Aid is one of the NGOs, non-governmental organizations, that's still active in Iraq, that hasn't pulled their people out, and that so far hasn't sustained any attacks, at least that I know of. And one of their reporters wrote this piece for The Guardian, titled, Where Are the Missing Billions? Dominic Nutt, N-U-T-T. He points out that the Madrid conference, it looks pretty good. $33 billion, $20 billion of it from the U.S., $13 billion from other countries, pledged for Iraq. He points out that back when there was a similar conference a couple of years ago after the Afghan war, when the Taliban were defeated, the world could only scrape together $4.5 billion. And so he says, the world has promised the equivalent of around $1,400 for each Iraqi citizen when Afghans got just $57. And then he asks the question, why has Iraq been given so much more money than Afghanistan? Is it because Afghanistan does not produce oil? See, this is the 900-pound gorilla in the corner kind of thing. This is the nobody wants to talk about this. There were all these discussions over the weekend and on the talk shows and whatnot. You know, well, what can we do to internationalize? Why don't the other countries of the world want to participate? Well, the bottom line has been that this administration has been perfectly willing to say, yes, you can send in soldiers. You can help us with firepower. We'll maintain command, but we'll let you come in. But we are not going to let the United Nations, certainly not any other country in the world, but in particular, we are not going to let the United Nations supervise the process of selling off the businesses of Iraq. And we are not going to let the United Nations supervise the process of pumping oil out of Iraq. No, that is going to Americans. I mean, this goes back to what was his name? The King of the Vandals in the 5th century. I'm forgetting his name. Anyway, when soldiers were paid in plunder, I mean, it used to be that the way that soldiers were paid was, hey, let's go invade another country, and whatever we get, y'all can split up. And they didn't get salaries. They didn't get paychecks. They got plunder. And here we are again. And the world knows it. So this is the thing. The world, we don't talk about it in America. It's like impolite to talk about. That the President of the United States has said, and I quote, there was no connection between Iraq or between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein, end quote. The Secretary of State has said it. Condoleezza Rice has said it. The Secretary of Defense has said it. The only senior official who hasn't said it is Dick Cheney. And he hasn't denied it. Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. Why did we attack? Well, much of the world is looking at this and going, okay, you said you attacked for altruistic reasons, and we were willing to believe that. But now you will not allow the United Nations to administer the selling off of the assets of the nation of Iraq. And you will not allow the United Nations to invite companies in. And there are many companies in the world that can do the work of rebuilding the infrastructure of Iraq. And you will not allow the United Nations to pump the oil out of Iraq, and you will not allow the United Nations to determine who's going to be on the Iraqi Governing Council. And this is beginning to look a little stinky to the rest of the world. And it's not just that it's American companies. It's that it's American companies who are multi-million dollar donors to this administration. At the Madrid conference, Dominic Nutt points out in this article, where are the missing billions? The American-led coalition has failed to account for $4 billion in oil revenues and assets from the Saddam regime. This was the oil for food program. Saddam could sell oil, and the UN would let him buy food with that money. And the UN handled the money. Well, the UN handed that money. $4 billion of it so far. It's going to be about $6.2 by the end of the year. They handed that $4 billion over to the United States and said, okay, here's the money from the Oil for Food program. You can use it to rebuild Iraq. And now the UN and the rest of the countries in the world are saying, now, by the way, what did you guys do with that $4 billion? And what does Bush say? What does this administration say? We're not going to tell you. They've accounted for a tiny fraction of it. They said, well, you know, there was $125 million was spent on buying wheat. Was that Iraqi wheat bought from Iraqi farmers, or was it American wheat? Well, we're not going to tell you that. $6 million has been spent on oil infrastructure. Was that Iraqi companies that did that work, or American companies? And this altogether, I mean, this is that's $131 million out of $4 billion. It's a drop in the bucket. Where's the rest of the money? Talk about creating edges. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
It can be, which is
why you want to feel relief fast. I mean, the instant maximum strength Mylan's a liquid hits your throat, you can feel it rushing right to where you need it.
Ah, the cool liquid hits the back of your throat, and you know you're feeling something
velvety smooth, soothing that burning inside you. Mylan's wonderful, wet, drenching sensation
restores and refreshes in a most glorious fashion.
Try maximum strength Mylan's.
Soothing at the
speed of life.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com or The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. I understand that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens have been listening to that Mike Malloy person pollute this great nation's airwaves for 3 hours every night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Surely you can find a more productive use of your evening hours, like organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly in your victory garden. Or you could spend the 3 hours simply standing in your yard, saluting the flag on your house, apartment, or trailer, or whatever you little people live in. I'm told some chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists every night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time when they feel the unnatural and un-American temptation to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. I'm certain in time you'll find the method that works best for you and your family. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
I'm driving my blue car, baby, down from the mountain so high. I'm driving my blue car, baby, down from the mountain so high.
And welcome back. You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. China's factories aim to fill the world's garages. Boy, some interesting news today about the workplace. And I've got a couple of quotes here from Alan Greenspan that are just going to curl your hair or roll up your socks or whatever the old phrase is from the 40s. I don't remember now. Before my time anyway. Anyhow, we have 1-800-TALK-YES is our number if you'd like to be on the program. If you have thoughts about what we're talking about today, comments, concerns, considerations, arguments, questions. I think I already said comments, didn't I? Dan from Maryland's on the line. Dan, thanks for calling 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
I am great, Dan, but I'll get better. How about you?
Pretty good. I wanted to throw out another concept. You were talking about edges.
Yeah.
Another concept that's important right now, unfortunately, is the tipping point.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And I think that we have gotten to that point in this country. One of the things you mentioned about campaign finance reform and how much it costs to get elected, I think that we're not seeing companies spending money to get someone elected. We're seeing them spending money to get favorable treatment after the elections.
Right.
I think the way that our redistricting state by state has been done in this country, most of the elections are pretty much foregone conclusions.
Yeah, I think it's fewer than about 5% of elections, federal elections for the House and Senate are really considered contested.
Right.
I don't remember the exact percentage, but it's fairly low.
Well, I think they say there are about 20 seats in Congress that are going to be contested in this coming election. So we've really reached the point where I think the conservatives, and conservatives may not be the right word here. I think we may be talking about fascists.
Yeah, Barry Goldwater has got to be rolling over in his grave. I mean, the people who call themselves conservatives today are basically just fronts, just shills for corporations, for corporate power. This is feudal. What used to be called feudalism 500 years ago, what Mussolini thought he had reinvented. I mean, because the feudal lords were the owners of the manor houses and the palaces and the land on which the people lived, and so they owned the land and they owned the people. And that was called feudalism. And Mussolini noticed that, you know, they didn't have that anymore so much in Italy in the 1930s, but they did have these corporate empires rather than individual, you know, local land-owning empires.
Mm-hmm.
And so much like the king did with the Magna Carta, in which he cut a deal with the feudal lords and said, okay, let's coexist, Mussolini cut a deal with the corporate lords and said, let's coexist, let's create a form of government that includes both of us. And he called that corporatism at first, and then later he changed the name of it to fascism. And the definition of fascism is very simple and very straightforward. It's the merger, and I quote from the American Heritage Dictionary, fascism is the merging of business and state interests, end quote. And so, yeah, I agree.
Well, I think we've got that same agreement with the Bush-Cheney-Rove regime.
Oh, sure. This is the first time in the history of the United States that you've got a CEO as president and a CEO as vice president. I mean, it is so obvious to the rest of the world. It's amazing that it's not so obvious to us. But, you know, I think that there's two tipping points here, Dan. You talk about the tipping point in that book by, what's his name? Anyhow, that it's a brilliant book and it's a great concept. And the original article in, I think it was in The Atlantic that spurred the book was great. But the two tipping points are, one, are we going to tip over into a truly fascistic state where the government is simply an instrument of the power projected by wealth and the primary instrument of accumulating wealth is the corporation? Or are we going to tip back in the other direction toward democracy? Is there going to be a counter-revolt, as there was in the 1930s with FDR, as there was in the 1890s with the progressive populist movement? And I think either one is a possibility. We're right on the edge.
Yeah, I guess my concern is not a lot of people are aware of just how dangerous the situation we're in right now.
Yeah, I agree, Dan, and that's why we need to be waking them up. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Thanks, Dan, for the call. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Wildlife experts try to decipher the mystery behind a molecule that's killing animals in parts of North America. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A particularly unusual disease is infecting herds of deer and elk across the United States and Canada. It's called chronic wasting disease, and it's caused by a lifeless molecule, not a virus or bacteria. The molecule is an abnormal protein. It induces similar molecules in an infected animal to take the same form. The copycats will slowly break down the victim's nervous system, and ultimately they will destroy its brain. Chronic wasting disease is commonly known as CWD, and it's a problem in 9 states and 2 provinces. It was first seen in the wild in the 1980s in Colorado and Wyoming. Relatively few animals were infected, and they lived in herds that were widely dispersed across the landscape. But last year, the disease showed up in southwestern Wisconsin, and that unnerved a lot of people. CWD had moved into a part of the country where deer are numerous and herds are concentrated. That raises the risk that the disease could start spreading more rapidly. Mike Samuel is an ecologist who works in the Wildlife Research Unit of the University of Wisconsin in Madison. He's working with state and federal authorities to study CWD, and he says the mystery begins with the abnormal protein molecule.
It's not alive. I mean, it's not cellular. It's not like a bacteria or a virus. It doesn't have any of the functions that we think of associated with life in terms of excretion and respiration and all those kind of typical things that you learn in biology.
Samuel says the way this molecule moves from animal to animal is still unclear. He says that has to be understood to determine what can be done to limit the impact of chronic wasting disease on wildlife. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have 2 chinchillas and I have a big Briar.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Therese Dolittle, who talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All they need is love.
Animal Talk on the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ed Zelenak, and I'm a lawyer. That's my 12-step program. And if you break out in a rash at the mere suggestion of talking to a lawyer, then you need to join in the legal huddle, where I'll be your Sunday morning quarterback as we make a 100-yard dash through the American legal system, where myths will be demystified and red tape will be shredded. Join me for mirth, merriment, and a little bit of contempt of court Sundays, 9 to 11, on the IE America Radio Network.
Best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I don't want millions, mister. I don't want your diamond ring. All I want is the right to live, mister. Won't you give me back my job again?
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman exposing the con in conservative here on the IE America Radio Network, where the official slogan of the Bush administration when it comes to who the senior administration official is who outed a CIA agent committing a traitorous act of treason is...
I know nothing, I see nothing, and I say nothing.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back. Great song from Tom Rush there. And Tom is an old friend and a brilliant singer. And won't you give me back my job again? And this today, in today's paper, New York Times News Service, this out of the Burlington Free Press, not sure when it first ran in the Times, probably yesterday, maybe today, talks about China. And try this year, 12 million cars, or this last year, 12 million cars were produced in the United States, 10 million in Japan, 4.8 million in Germany, 3.8 million in China. China is getting and is preparing. I mean, preparing. They're just, you know, full tilt boogie. We are going to take over the car industry, just like we've taken over every other industry, they're saying. And just get some of the details of this. Honda is now making Accords in Guangzhou. That's the southern province, by the way, where SARS actually started, interestingly, that are identical to those it manufactures in Ohio. And now, quoting from this article, this New York Times News Service article by Keith Bradshaw, China's factories aim to fill the world's garages. Workers at Dickensian factories filled with acrid green fumes still ladle chemical additives into buckets of molten steel, then tip the buckets by hand to pour the steel into molds for auto parts. He goes on to say, but with broad support from Beijing and foreign investors, manufacturers in China are quickly improving their operations and staffing them with workers earning as little as 50 cents an hour. Within a few years, they are likely to be building high-quality cars and parts for as little as or even less than anyone else in the world. Analysts say that China could surpass Germany as the world's number three car-making country within 4 years. Executives at each major automaker say the combination of low costs and strong demand gives them no choice but to invest heavily in China or risk being left behind. Frederick Henderson, the president of GM's Asian and Pacific operations, says, our competitors have reached the same conclusion and they're moving pretty quickly. Union leaders, the article summarizes, in industrialized countries are worried about low-wage competition from China and are making it a political issue, as well it should be. This stuff doesn't just happen in a vacuum. Economic activity, business activity can only exist on the substrate of government. Government has to provide the stable currency for business. It has to provide the court system for business. It has to define the rules by which business must play. In all cases, there is no such thing as a, quote, free market. A market is always defined. There are always rules to the game. There have to be, otherwise there's no game. It's like saying, let's have a free football game. Well, what does that mean? It means there's no rules. We all just go out on the field. And whoever ends up with the ball at one end or the other, you know, wins. Well, that's even part of a rule. But we're going to say, oh, you can have 30 guys on your team. That's free football, right? So anyway, free labor, free trade. Give me a break. There is no such thing. What there is free for corporations, free of government regulation, free as in cheap labor. That's the corporate agenda here. Anyhow, the article ends, union leaders in industrialized countries are worried about low-wage competition from China and are making it a political issue. Competing on wages, quote, is a race to the bottom, said Ron Gettelfinger, president of the United Auto Workers. And Gettelfinger adds, and no one, wins a race to the bottom, end quote. God bless him. Right on. It is here at the same time, the Baltimore Sun today, workplace angst at an all-time high. Now, I'm going somewhere with this. I want you to follow along. This is, in various surveys, workers are registering the highest levels of job dissatisfaction in years. Workplace anxiety is near epidemic, says this article. Charles Craven, a labor law professor, says, and I quote, I think what you've seen in the last 15 to 20 years is just an avarice that we haven't seen since the late 1800s. Anxiety, the article goes on to point out, has been compounded by anger over the division of riches. Top executives average more than 500 times what average workers earn per year. Can you show me one person who actually is working 500 times harder than another person? You know, when I was a kid growing up, in the 50s and 60s, the primary wage differential was that was defined by the military, civil service, and academia. In colleges and universities, in the army, and all branches of the military, and in the civil service, the most senior official could not earn more than 20 times what the lowliest paid person earned. And in some institutions it was 15 times, and in some it was 10 times. But 10 to 1 to 20 to 1, that was the typical spread. And there was this theory that, well, maybe somebody actually could work 20 times harder or have 20 times, you know, have training or skills that are really worth 20 times as much. In hospitals, hospitals were all, by law, nonprofit organizations. The hospital administrators, the doctors, they, at the very most, made 20 times what the janitor made. And what that did was that brought about, and it was a broad social contract. It was both spoken and unspoken. There was simply an understanding that anything beyond that is simply greedy. It's not moral. It's not appropriate. It's not good for our society. It's not healthy. And it indicates a form of mental illness, an obsessive compulsive disorder applied to cash. And there was just this consensus that that's the way we do it. So here we see, anxiety has been compounded by anger over the division of riches. Top executives average more than 500 times what average workers earn per year, far greater than the 40-time multiple between top and bottom pay only 30 years ago. 71% of American workers say they are now working more than 40 hours a week. So we have this anxiety in the workplace. Now, did this just come about out of nowhere? Let me just read you a few quotes from the business press. I mean, if you want to know what the power elites in this country are thinking, they actually talk to each other rather out loud where everybody can see it. It's just that most people don't read the Wall Street Journal or Forbes or Barron's, except those who are profiting from this kind of thinking. But let me just share a couple quick quotes with you. This is from the Wall Street Journal on January 27th, 1997. And I quote, "Workers' fear of losing their jobs restrains them from seeking the pay raises that usually crop up when employers have trouble finding people to hire. Even if the economy didn't slow down as he expected," he, Alan Greenspan, told Fed colleagues last summer he saw little danger of a sudden upturn in wages and prices. Quote, this is a quote from Alan Greenspan, quote, "Because workers are more worried about their own job security and their marketability if forced to change jobs, they are apparently accepting smaller increases in their compensation at any given level of labor market tightness," end quote, Mr. Greenspan told Congress at the time. Here's another. 1994, Barron's headline, "A dual blessing. The best of all worlds. Employment is booming and wage inflation remains low." Wage inflation is business speak for we get to pay our employees less. Wage inflation is when pay goes up. Okay, if wage inflation remains low, we get to pay less. 2 years later, the Wall Street Journal says, and I quote, "What really turned Wall Street on was a surprisingly modest increase in third quarter labor costs." See, this is the conservative agenda. Cheap labor. That's the bottom line. "The employment cost index, a measure of hourly compensation costs for wages, salaries, and benefits, rose only 0.6% for all civilian workers last quarter, the slowest pace in almost 4 years. The thing to keep in mind, see, that what the cons want you to think is that if the economy grows, if gross domestic product, if economic activity increases, if the stock market goes up, that people who draw salaries are going to earn more money. Ain't true. There is sometimes a correlation, yeah. But the bottom line is that wages are not a function of economic activity. Wages are a function of power. That's what it comes down to. On the corporate side, they have the right to organize. They organize in a variety of different fashions. You can organize capital together. It's called a corporation. You can organize a whole bunch of different businesses together. It's called a conglomerate, a corporation that does multiple things. Or a monopoly. You can organize a whole bunch of these together. It's called a trade association or a lobbying group. They can absolutely organize. But can labor organize? It's getting harder and harder. It's getting harder and harder. As the Wall Street Journal pointed out a couple of years ago, indications that raises aren't escalating and are quite possibly deaccelerating isn't enough to pacify anti-inflation hawks. See, when wages go up, they call it inflation. It's really the smallest variable in the index, but it's the one that they get the most hysterical about. They look for advanced signs that wage increases will begin. Mr. Greenspan, for once, scrutinizes worker insecurity. You get that? Mr. Greenspan, for one, scrutinizes worker insecurity. He has said in recent remarks that he believes a pervasive fear of unemployment has kept wage demands modest, but he is worried, this during the Clinton era, that the robust labor market would soon embolden workers to demand more. He's worried that workers are going to demand more. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Ed in Dayton, Ohio, is on the line. Ed, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hello. I'm calling here from Dayton, and I just wanted to remind everybody that tomorrow is Election Day around the country, and although it's not a congressional election or a presidential election, there are a lot of important things going on. Just south of us here in Kentucky, they're getting ready to elect a new governor, and the Republican Party is sending operatives out to the polls to challenge the registration of people in urban districts.
Hmm.
And here in Ohio, we have this thing going on where the state, because the federal government is not kicking money back to us anymore, our governor has this scheme called Issue 1, where what he wants to do is get the people to vote for something, a bond issue that would allow the state to borrow money, which then they would lend or grant to private corporations, ostensibly to create more jobs and economic activity. So basically, we want to take your tax dollars or your children's tax dollars and grandchildren's tax dollars and give them to private businesses, all with the idea in mind that this is going to create jobs.
Yeah, the Republican governor here in Vermont has got a couple of schemes like this that he's laid out in the last few days.
This kind of thing's going on all around the country.
It is nuts.
And, you know, this is part of the equation of what's going on with workers.
Yeah. Yeah, it's bad. Thank you for pointing that out, and you're absolutely right. And thank you also for pointing out that the Republicans are sending out people into when you say urban areas. I'm assuming that's sort of
down in Kentucky, you know, where there are a lot of Democrats, a lot of blacks, a lot of people who are not committed to this trickle down agenda. You know,
there you go. And they're going to challenge them. Say, let me see your ID. And they're not official poll workers, and people won't realize that. This is reprehensible. Ed, thank you for pointing that out. Yes, indeed, it is Election Day, or it will be tomorrow. Let's get out there. Let's participate. Thank you, Ed, for sharing that. I appreciate it. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. Philip in Florida is on the line. Hey, Philip, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, Tom. Given what you just said about people having heavy anxiety about their jobs, which is probably one of the most important things to someone, is the ability to feed themselves and their family. Okay.
Yeah.
Given that this is true, how is he going to get reelected?
You know, it's incredible. I have heard at least 30 or 40 times in the last 4 or 5 days on various radio and television programs, shills for the Republican Party or for the so-called conservatives or the corporate front or politicians on the right talking about this upturn in economic activity. They finally got a quarter where they actually had an increase in GDP. Nobody is pointing out that along with that statistic was also released the fact that for average workers, yesterday's announcement, or this being last week actually, that announcement was not comforting. All told, wage income is down, according to the Economic Policy Institute, quote, real wage and salary income declined by 1.2% between the start of the last recession, March of 2001, and the most recent month of data, August of 2003. That's the worst performance since 1959. I mean, we're seeing an actual decline, not only in jobs, but a 1.2% decline in wages for people who have jobs.
Okay.
Yeah, and so how's he going to get reelected? He's going to get reelected because he's going to have $250 million to carpet bomb the American voters, because we have through the Boston versus Bloody Supreme Court decision in 1978, where the court decided that corporations were persons and that money was speech, which was insane. We have turned the political process over to our corporations. We no longer require radio and television stations to give free time to candidates. If he wins, that'll be how he does it, I predict. Philip, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I appreciate your comment. What's the state of American democracy? This is Tom Hartman. Talk radio for the rest of us. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Welcome to Baguette Country. Introducing the Santa Fe Fire-Grilled Chicken Baguette Sandwich from Burger King. A juicy breast of fire-grilled chicken, sweet peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on our new fresh-baked bread. Made to order with only 5 grams of fat. The new Santa Fe Chicken Baguette. Burger King. Come on over. The fire is ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817. The Washington Monthly.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days, and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
We have this representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector!
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to the lifestyles of the wet and stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Mike Muller.
Mike Show.
Jody in Arlington Heights, she said, first, yesterday's show was the first time I was seriously concerned for your health. I hope you've recovered. You know, I'm fine. I get crazy. My blood pressure skyrockets. I understand that. I have a pretty good doctor who recently put me on blood pressure medicine, and it seems to be working. There have been times when I've done talk radio when I thought I was going to burst an artery, but that would make for good radio, wouldn't it?
Hey, did you hear my wife program the other night? Some bitch died right on the air. There was this popping sound. Woo, man, cool. I bet Rush couldn't do that.
Sorry, didn't mean to frighten you. You're a bit late for that.
Hey, when he does that.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Shake it up. Shake it up. Shake it up.
And welcome back, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network on day 112 of the search for the White House leaker, the White House traitor. Day 267 of the search for Saddam Hussein and the weapons of missing of mass destruction, and day 782 of the search for Osama bin Laden, Osama bin Forgotten. You know, the important thing to keep in mind is that when you see productivity figures, going back to this economic stuff, that when you see productivity figures going up, that the factor, the variable that has caused this in large part is the fact that jobs are being exported from the United States. And when companies export jobs, they don't actually hire those people in the other countries. Even if they do, you see an increase in productivity because the same amount of work is being done for less labor cost. And so that looks like increased productivity on a balance sheet. But more often than not, they hire a third party, a subcontractor, very often in the other country. And so it just becomes an expense item in the balance sheet rather than a labor expense item. And so much more work is getting done, and labor costs are going down, and that translates into an apparent increase in productivity. You following this? It seems like American workers are more productive. American workers are the most productive in the world, they tell us. Well, the reality is that it's not, that may be the case, but nobody really knows for sure, because these numbers are all fudged, because the productivity is being contaminated by the fact that in fact, last week, Louise dialed 411 to get a phone number here in Vermont. And the person on the other end had a funny accent, and she said, "Are you in India?" And the person said, "Yes," and hung up on her. I mean, we're outsourcing our 411 calls to India. We're outsourcing. I made a hotel reservation the other day. Where are you? I'm in India. Those people are not showing up. The work is showing up as being done. But the cost of the labor is not showing up on the balance sheets of American corporations as a labor cost. And so it appears that productivity is going up, which means that corporations are more profitable, and everybody says, oh, isn't that wonderful? The economy is getting healthier. No. What's happening is the middle class is being eviscerated. It's being disemboweled. It's being ripped apart by the cheap labor policies of the conservatives. And this will only change when people go to the polls, as you should do tomorrow, and vote those bums out of office. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, exposing the con in conservative.
Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from sirens night and day.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program. Take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday.
Mike Malloy is rational, and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
Ooh,
you hate me?
Why don't I put something on that says he's a great goof, liberal?
Goof?
Yeah, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. President Bush is losing public support for his war and economic policies, according to a new poll, which for the first time shows that a majority of Americans disapprove of his handling of Iraq. A slim majority, 51%, disapprove of his Iraq policy, while 47% approve, according to the ABC News Washington Post poll released Sunday. Most Americans, 54%, continue to believe that the Iraq war was worth fighting, but that's down from 70% in April. A new high, 62%, say the level of U.S. casualties is unacceptable. Fewer than 1 in 10 Americans say Bush has made the nation more prosperous, while 58%, a new high, say the president fails to understand their problems. Iraqi insurgents hiding in a date palm grove shot down a Chinook helicopter carrying dozens of soldiers heading for home leave Sunday, killing 16 and wounding 20 in the deadliest strike against U.S. forces since they invaded Iraq in March. Three other Americans were killed in separate attacks Sunday, including one 1st Armored Division soldier in Baghdad and two U.S. civilians working for the Army Corps of Engineers in Fallujah. All three were victims of roadside bombs, the military said. Sunday's death toll was the highest for American troops since March 23rd, and the attack represented a major escalation against the U.S.-led coalition. President Bush refused to personally comment on the attacks. He spent the day out of public view, a down day between fundraising appearances Saturday and Monday. Iran's supreme leader said Sunday that excessive demands from abroad could prompt Tehran to retreat from a recent commitment to give UN inspectors more access to its atomic facilities. The warning comes as the IAEA evaluates Iran's nuclear program to prove it is not developing atomic weapons, as U.S. officials believe. More after this.
Military veterans deserve better. They must wait endlessly for basic health care from the Department of Veterans Affairs. If you or a military veteran you know is one of the many heroes waiting for VA health care, the American Legion wants to tell your story to your elected officials in Washington, D.C. Call toll-free 1-866-539-2509. Or visit www.legion.org today. The number again, 1-866-539-2509. We'll tell your story where it matters.
The oldest person in the world, Kamata Ohango, died on Friday at age 116, a spokesman for a hospital in southern Japan said. She had been in hospital in the city of Kagoshima for several weeks, according to a relative. Born in 1887, when Japan was gradually opening up to the world after more than two centuries of isolation, Hongo was known for her love of dancing and for sleeping 2 days and then staying awake for the next two. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Being tough is her job, and she does it well. She is the enforcer.
Hanging up, you're grounded. That means no phone.
Come on, it was only weed. I only did it once.
She doesn't love being tough. She's tough because she loves the enforcer.
When I say no weed, I mean no weed.
She's more than a hero. She's
A good mom.
Parents, the anti-drug. For information on how to keep your kids away from marijuana, visit theantidrug.com or call 1-800-788-2800.
Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Remember the glorious promises of globalization? CEOs, politicians of both parties, and media pundits all joined in the hallelujah chorus to proclaim that corporate-driven, laissez-faire globalization was the answer for all the world's ills. If only all the nations, especially those with rich resources to exploit, would open up to foreign ownership, forego government regulation of business, accept the stringent financial medicine of the IMF and World Bank, and privatize their economies, then the omniscient power of the global marketplace would shine its radiant light everywhere, and even the poorest villager would own a Lexus. It was, of course, a bottle of global snake oil, sold by the flimflammers of the prosperous world and willingly swallowed by get-rich-quick rulers of the third world. Bolivia offers a peek at reality. 20 years ago, the elite corporate-oriented leaders of this poor South American nation rushed to the promises of the flimflammers, led by the U.S. They sold off the nation's public assets, opened their arms wide to foreign investors, and waited for prosperity to flow. 20 years later, unemployment is rampant, economic growth is...
The chat room button, it'll take you to one of the forums on CompuServe. Click the chat button there, and boom, you are in. There's no fee. If you have never used AOL or CompuServe, you will have to get a user ID. All that requires is that you put in a name and a password. You don't have to pay for anything. You don't have to give them any personal information. So anyhow, very straightforward, very simple. And you can drop in and join. Do you know what is... the Matrix? I've been using as a slogan for this show now for some months that the Tom Hartman program is the pill that will help you escape the Matrix. Remember the movie? You know, do you want the red pill or the green pill, as I recall it was? And one lets you stay within the Matrix, and the other lets you get out of the Matrix. Well, it turns out that there is a system called the Multi-State M Anti-A Terrorism T-R Information I Exchange X Matrix, M-A-T-R-I-X. Remember the Federal Total Information Awareness Database that former Iran-Contra felon John Poindexter was going to do, where he was going to compile government information and he was going to buy information from private corporations about you and me, you know, all of our where you're, what you've bought on your credit card, whether or not you've subscribed to porn sites on the internet, whether you're shopping at this store or that, you know, whatever, everything that you're doing, if you're buying airplane tickets, where you're flying to, what your investments look like. They were going to combine all of this information to create this huge database about Americans. Many would say in absolute opposition to the Fourth Amendment, the Fourth Amendment of the United States, the right of the people to be secure. Now, see, back in 1787, 1788, when these amendments were passed, and ratified, actually a little, it was 1791, I think, was when the first of the Ten Amendments, yes, December 15th, 1791. Back then, they didn't use the word privacy, because privacy meant bodily functions back then. And a privy was a place where you went to perform bodily functions, and if somebody said in polite company, excuse me, I need privacy for a moment, or I must step out for a moment of privacy, everybody understood that they were going to go to the outhouse. So to say in 1791 that Americans should have a right to privacy would be like saying you have a right to use the bathroom today. But there was another word that was, you know, language changes over time. We're talking about 222 years ago. now since the Bill of Rights was attached to the Constitution. And the word that was used back then was not privacy, it was security. And by security, they didn't mean what we mean security today. They didn't mean defending the homeland. Homeland, by the way, is another word that makes me crazy. None of us had probably heard the word homeland, except very rarely, before 2001. One of these days, I'll tell you the whole story of that. That is mind-boggling. But, you know, let me stay on point here. We had, so in at the time that the Constitution was being written, they used the word security, and what they meant was what we would today call privacy. That is, nobody can look in on your stuff. They can't go through your papers. They can't go into your personal life. They can't rifle through your possessions. Let me read you the Fourth Amendment. It's very straightforward. The right of the people to be secure in their persons. In other words, you can't be frisked. In their houses, your home can't be invaded. In their papers, the details of your life cannot be investigated. In your effects, everything else you own, right? Against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. It doesn't say shall not be violated except if the government of John Poindexter decides to start some giant thing that he's going to call total information awareness. Yes, I am John Poindexter and I bring you total information awareness. Well, now he's actually reinvented it. Well, not he, but it has been reinvented. Anyway, let me finish the Fourth Amendment here. And no warrant shall be issued but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. In other words, the only way the Constitution allows information to be gathered about us that involves our persons, our houses, our papers, or our effects is when a warrant has been issued. Now, of course, Mr. Ashcroft and the Republicans thought that was a bad idea, and they proposed the Patriot Act. And the Patriot Act landed on the desks of the head of the Democrats who were running the Senate, Tom Daschle, and the head of the Judiciary Committee, Patrick Leahy. And these two men had some doubts about the Patriot Act. And they began expressing those doubts in public. And lo and behold, a day or two later, they both got letters filled with anthrax. And had to leave their offices and their papers and effects. And throughout the debate about the Patriot Act, didn't have access to their own materials. But anyhow, here we have the Federal Total Information Awareness Database, the mining program. This was killed because of bad publicity, as you recall. Now it has reemerged as the Multi-State Anti-Terrorism Information Exchange, otherwise known as Matrix. Each state has its own version, and they are linked together. The states that are online so far, include Alabama, Connecticut, Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, Louisiana, Michigan, New York, Oregon, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, Ohio, and Utah. Two states have recently dropped out, citing privacy and security concerns, Texas and California. And what this thing does, By instead of having the federal government run this, by instead having the states run it, it takes the heat off the Pentagon. It also eliminates congressional oversight. You're not going to have Henry Waxman holding hearings on this one. You're not going to have Pat Leahy saying, hey, wait a minute, I don't think this is right, because it's not the federal government doing it. It's the states. And many state governments don't have the kind of watchdogs protecting individual freedoms that the federal government has. That, of course, the Bush administration, in their efforts to privatize 800,000 federal employees, is trying to outsource. So what are some of the details of this thing? Well, first of all, the Department of Justice has invested $4 million into this thing. It started in where else? Florida. Now, here's the kicker. It's run by a private corporation. A private corporation. Seisint Inc., S-E-I-S-I-N-T Inc., out of Boca Raton, Florida. The company's founder, Hank Asher, was a former drug smuggler. He resigned last August. His former company, Database Technologies, was the company in Florida that was responsible for removing the names of African-American voters from the voting rolls in 2000, erroneously contending that they were felons. Is a light bulb starting to go off over your head? I mean, this is really scary. Having an error-ridden database affecting an election is one thing, although it, you know, clearly, had they not purged between 70 and 90,000 people, most of them African Americans, from the database of voters in Florida, even though fewer than 1% of them were actually felons, clearly our president right now would be Al Gore and not George W. Bush. But imagine a similar error-ridden database being used as a tool by the FBI and it's got your name in it. Can you imagine being thrown in jail for a crime you didn't commit? Because the Matrix database goofed? The Matrix is the first large-scale combination of government and private records in one central database. Think about it. How accurate your credit report is will define how accurate this database will be. Right now, Diebold Systems, the company that makes the voting machines that some suggest, through probably computer error, perhaps being hacked, reversed the outcome of the Georgia elections in the 2000 election cycle and caused the 2002 cycle and caused Max Cleland to not be elected senator when he, in fact, was, and put Saxby Chambliss in instead and bounced out the Democratic governor of Georgia. Diebold is claiming proprietary information. In fact, they're the headline on today's Common Dreams. They're suing people who are putting information up about how flaky their voting machines may be, or alleging that their voting machines are flaky. Is this company that is operating the Matrix going to claim that the information is their private property also? They have every legal right to do so. Governments are using this, but it's being held and owned by a private corporation. The Department of Justice put $4 million into it. It started in Florida, collects information about individuals from government files and from private for-profit information companies. Types of information it gathers include credit histories, driver's license photographs, marriage and divorce records, social security numbers, dates of birth, names and addresses of family members, neighbors and business associates. I mean, can you imagine an identity thief hacking into this thing? It makes all of this available in a search engine for state and federal law enforcement. You think all the police in this country are so incorruptible that if they had information, access to all this information, it would never find its way into the hands of, for example, organized crime? This is bizarre. The Matrix is here. This is Tom Hartman, talk radio for the rest of us. You're the only nationally syndicated radio talk show that offers an alternative to the right-wing spin. Stay tuned.
Does Burger King have a new fire grilled chicken baguette sandwich waiting for you? Unfortunately, no. Each one is freshly made to order without waiting for anyone. Like our Santa Fe chicken baguette with juicy fire grilled chicken, fire roasted peppers and onions, and a hearty fire roasted tomato sauce on a fresh baked baguette. All with only 5 grams of fat. Order your own Santa Fe chicken baguette from Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com or The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
My name is is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine, and I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now, 1-800-865-8449.
When I wear black, even a little dandruff shows. And my old dandruff shampoo just wasn't cutting it. I still had flakes and dry scalp. So I switched to Selsun Blue Moisturizing Shampoo with aloe and moisturizers. Doctor recommended Selsun Blue has a proven ingredient to relieve dandruff. Plus, it keeps my hair and scalp healthy and flake-free.
If you see flakes, try Selsun Blue. Selsun Blue Moisturizing Dandruff Shampoo.
I'm telling you, it really works.
Never wear black without the blue. Selsun Blue. Use as directed.
The Tom Hartman Show.
The computerized voting machines in the last election, our question is the theft of your vote. On our chat room here, Brain Shrub points out that H is the 8th letter of the alphabet, A is the 1st letter of the alphabet. So if you take that 18181, the exact number of votes that 3 different candidates in one county in Texas got on these computerized voting machines, and you simply convert it to letters, it becomes... Is it a conspiracy or a coincidence?
Okay, first of all, I wanted to say congratulations. We were elected to the White House by one of the narrowest margins in history. 63% of registered voters.
Wait a second. You wanted me to poll registered voters?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Welcome back to the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations.
I kind of ran out of time in my rant just before the end there. I should have said you're listening to the only nationally syndicated radio daytime radio talk show that offers an alternative to the right-wing spin of Rush Limbaugh and his imitators. And there are several other good liberal programs on in other time slots. But as far as I know, we're the only one doing noon to 3, coast to coast. And it'll be interesting to see if Mr. Pillpopper is... You know how he does when he gets back on the air, but that's a whole other thing here. Kentucky, one of the key governor races in the South. Isn't it interesting? Here, CNN.com, and thanks again, Ed and Dayton, for bringing this up on my radar screen. Here in Vermont, I'm not sure. I was just asking Louise. I'm not sure that we're actually having an election tomorrow. I'm not sure that there's anything on the ballot. I've got to find out. I read the paper every day. I haven't seen anything. Anyway, days before Kentucky's gubernatorial election, residents of predominantly black voting districts filed state and federal lawsuits to bar Republicans from placing vote challengers in their precincts. You getting this? This is what Ed said was going on in Dayton, Ohio as well. This is a story from Louisville, Kentucky. The lawsuits filed Friday claim the Jefferson County Republican Party's planned use of challengers is intended to reduce voter turnout in the largely Democratic districts in West Louisville. The Kentucky American Civil Liberties Union, representing the five plaintiffs, claim the GOP plan targets black voters in violation of the Federal Voting Rights Act. And who should show up in Kentucky? But, of course, another story from CNN. President Bush made several campaign stops Saturday in an attempt to give a last-minute boost to gubernatorial candidates in Mississippi and Kentucky. Bush used a basic stump speech throughout the day and at times used identical lines, except for switching the names of the candidates and the states. And, of course, Bush also campaigned Saturday in Mississippi, where polls indicate Washington lobbyist, former tobacco lobbyist, and former Republican National Committee chair. How could you? Haley Barbour here has a slim lead over the Democratic Governor Ronnie Musgrove. How could you sleep at night, having been a lobbyist for the tobacco industry? I mean, I just don't get it. I don't understand how Haley Barbour can look himself in the in a mirror. Selling an addictive drug to kids, pushing it, fighting for legislation on behalf of that industry, a corporation where they lied. Just incredible. 1-800-TALK-YES or number 1-800-825-5937. And Joe in Brookings, Oregon's on the line. Hey, Joe, how you doing today?
Doing fine. Interesting you talk about the gubernatorial elections in Mississippi and Kentucky, because I don't think it's any coincidence at all that Zell Miller is coming out with his new book, and he's doing an interview on Tim Russert talking about the Democratic Party isn't for conservatives and for nice guy conservatives and Southerners like him. And he just happens to be doing this, you know, just a couple of days before these gubernatorial elections. Here's a United States senator. Basically, he says, well, the Democratic Party is my home. He's basically telling all the rednecks and all that, leave the Democratic Party and join the Republicans.
Yeah, these are border states to Georgia. You know, that's a two and two I hadn't put together. Thanks for that, Joe. That's a good
one.
I think you're right.
Yeah, and then you know, Zell Miller, we've seen this same thing before. You know, how come nobody ever talks about all the Democrats that voted for Bush in 2000? You had Ronald Reagan. He was the head of Democrats for Nixon in 1960. John Connally did the same thing in 1972, Democrats for Nixon in 1972. Zell Miller doing the same thing. Nobody ever talks about this work.
Amazing. Good one, Joe. Joe, thanks for sharing that with us. And thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. This is Tom Hartman, straight to the heart of truth. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Wildlife experts try to decipher the mystery behind a molecule that's killing animals in parts of North America. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A particularly unusual disease is infecting herds of deer and elk across the United States and Canada. It's called chronic wasting disease, and it's caused by a lifeless molecule, not a virus or bacteria. The molecule is an abnormal protein. It induces similar molecules in an infected animal to take the same form. The copycats will slowly break down the victim's nervous system, and ultimately they will destroy its brain. Chronic wasting disease is commonly known as CWD, and it's a problem in 9 states and 2 provinces. It was first seen in the wild in the 1980s in Colorado and Wyoming. Relatively few animals were infected, and they lived in herds that were widely dispersed across the landscape. But last year, the disease showed up in southwestern Wisconsin, and that unnerved a lot of people. CWD had moved into a part of the country where deer are numerous and herds are concentrated. That raises the risk that the disease could start spreading more rapidly. Mike Samuel is an ecologist who works in the Wildlife Research Unit of the University of Wisconsin in Madison. He's working with state and federal authorities to study CWD, and he says the mystery begins with the abnormal protein molecule.
It's not alive. I mean, it's not cellular. It's not like a bacteria or a virus. It doesn't have any of the functions that we think of associated with life in terms of excretion and respiration and all those kind of typical things that you learn in biology.
Samuel says the way this molecule moves from animal to animal is still unclear. He says that has to be understood to determine what can be done to limit the impact of chronic wasting disease on wildlife. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Broadcasting from behind the good old working-class stainless steel microphone high up in the Green Mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont, this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live coast to coast. George Bush also campaigned Saturday in Mississippi. As we mentioned, Haley Barbour, Vice President Dick Cheney, and former New York Mayor Rudolph Giuliani have all visited Mississippi to campaign for Barbour. Another key Senate Southern race comes up next week as Louisiana holds a gubernatorial runoff on November 15th. Elsewhere tomorrow, mayoral elections will be held in Houston, San Francisco, and Philadelphia. One in Philadelphia has turned interesting. The office, from Newsday.com, where the office of incumbent John Street was bugged by the FBI. Street, who alleges the investigation is politically motivated, has built up a small lead over Republican Sam Katz since the bug was discovered. Dirty tricks backfire, could be, or it could be that, something's going to come back and bite him. Who knows? So that seems to be the major election news that's going on here. Interesting announcement just a few hours ago. Senator Bob Graham, who is probably one of the most, if not the most, popular politician in the state of Florida. You know, people say, well, you know, his running for president hurt him and all this kind of stuff. But the fact of the matter is that he really and truly is. In fact, the Miami Herald today, in an article that they just published just a few hours ago, said Graham is widely considered one of the most popular politicians in Florida. He hasn't faced a serious challenge since defeating Senator Paula Hawkins to win a seat in 1986. Senator Bob Graham has just said that not only is he not going to run for president, but he's not going to run for a fourth term in the United States Senate either. This is four Democrats now from the South who are not going to be running for the United States Senate. Zell Miller from Georgia, John Edwards from North Carolina, Fritz Hollings from South Carolina, and now Bob Graham.
It's gonna be tough for the Democrats. Bob Graham's most famous quote, and this is a wonder. He said, and I quote: "If the standard of impeachment that the Republicans set for Bill Clinton, a personal consensual relationship, was the basis for impeachment, would not a president who knowingly deceived the American people about something as important as whether to go to war meet the standard of impeachment?" Bob Graham. Let me just wrap up this thing on the Matrix, and then we'll get into... I want to get back into some of the stuff about democracy that I started the program with. This Matrix program, multi-state anti-terrorism information exchange, the multi-state reinvention of the federal total information awareness. The Matrix is here. Is going to go through all this information that it's buying from private company. It's run by the reinvention of a private company that was apparently the company that participated in stripping black voters from the voting rolls, from the polls in Florida before the 2000 election. Catherine Harris's little scam. And this company now owns your data and feeds it to police agencies in every state that wants to participate. This is a very clever way to sidestep the domestic spying that was outlawed after Watergate by the Church Committee. I mean, we passed a law that said that the CIA could not operate domestically, that we couldn't have spy agencies within the United States. Of course, Patriot Act and this administration are ignoring that as well. But with the federal government involved in this thing, keep in mind the Department of Justice has put $4 million into this Matrix thing. Expect to see the federal government once again spying on you and me. Other concerns: the database is easy and quick to access. The Department of Homeland Security recently published a revised rule for the computer-assisted passenger pre-screening program. This is the CAPS 2, which eliminates the 50-year limit on government maintaining detailed records on individuals. They can keep your information forever. The ACLU has submitted simultaneous Freedom of Information Act requests to Connecticut, Michigan, New York, and Ohio about information about those states' participation in the Matrix. And we will see what comes out of this. We shall see. But right now, it's... Now, this brings us back to what the founders were so clear about. And that was that in a democracy, even though things may get uncomfortable for those in power, in order for a democracy to survive and to work effectively, there must be vigorous debate and opposition. You can't have people who are afraid that the Matrix is spying on them say, "Gee, I better not say that. I better not do that. I don't think I'll get involved with this." I remember in Michigan in the 60s, the Red Squad, was it called, or Red Dog Squad? Michigan State Police were compiling records on people who were involved with SDS and the anti-war demonstrations. I never bothered to go down and ask for my records, but several of my friends did. One of my friends got a box that was 2.5 feet long of paper on him that they had compiled because of his just public speaking out against the war in Vietnam. Absolutely legal activity. Well, the founders said this is not appropriate. The clear idea, it goes back before that. The clear idea that Jefferson had, and that most of the founders shared. Now, John Adams didn't, by the way. but that Jefferson had was that if you allow the will of the majority to prevail while protecting the rights of the minorities, which is a democratic republic, within specific constraints defined by law, by constitutions. So you have a constitutional republic, a constitutionally defined democratic republic, that would bring the ultimate boon, the ultimate gift to humankind, peace. In 1795, 4 years after the Bill of Rights was amended to the United States Constitution, Immanuel Kant, or maybe it's Kant, K-A-N-T, in German it seems like it would be Kant. I've heard it pronounced both ways. Anyhow, he lived in a city called, at that time it was called Königsberg. It's now called Kaliningrad. And I've been there. I was there in December of 94 was the last time, and in fact I was invited to speak there December of this year, next month, and I had to turn it down, but I may be going back in the spring at the University of Kaliningrad. And it's an amazing city, and when I was there it was just after the fall of the Soviet Union. And what a mess. I mean, the mafia ran the place. There was no color anywhere. It was gray. It was cold. It was dreary. There were these giant open manholes and you know, open sewers. And I was there the week of the elections. I remember Vladimir Zhirinovsky was on TV. I think I mentioned this last week. Offering everybody, anybody who votes for me, you'll get a free turkey or a free chicken and a free pint of vodka. And the commentators on TV were having this discussion about, well, where's he going to get all these turkeys and chickens from? This was the first election in the thousand-year history of Russia. Well, anyhow, back in 1795, Immanuel Kant came up with the idea that if you had a world filled with democracies, where the decisions of war and peace were made by the people and not by the leaders, or were made by leaders who were responsible to and responsive to and elected by the people, so they had to do the people's will, or they wouldn't survive politically. If you had a world of those kind of governments, there would never again be a war. He published a paper in 1795, Zumeweigen Frieden, or Frieden, ein philosophischer, my German is terrible, ein philosophischer Entwurf, toward eternal peace, a philosophical draft. Forgive me, those of you who speak German competently. Ich habe ein bisschen Deutsch, aber nicht so viel. And in his Toward Eternal Peace, Kant just laid this right out. He said, if all nations were democratic, there would never be aggressors, because no majority of citizens would ever vote to send its own children off to die, and therefore the world would never again be afflicted by warfare. Now, Kant wasn't the first one to suggest this in 1795. Thomas Jefferson was saying the same thing, as were many others in America. They weren't just thinking of the American experiment, and it was an experiment. We were the first nation to have an elected representative democracy in the history of the civilized world. Now, tribal people had been doing it for 100,000 years or longer. The Iroquois Confederacy had existed for centuries, perhaps millennia, in North America, as had many other similar institutions among Native Americans and tribes of Native people in Africa, in South America, in North America. Between the time that the Romans left England in around the year, between the year 400 and the year 500, and the invasion of the French, the Normans, in 1066, the Battle of Hastings, the Saxon tribes ruled England. And Thomas Jefferson believed, he had read The History of England by Paul de Rupin de Taras, published in 1724, in which he outlined what life was like. I have the book. It's actually, pieces of it are going to be in the next book, in my next book, which will be out next summer. And he talked about how these tribal people of the English Isle, prior to the invasion of the Normans, lived peacefully and democratically, and that their kings were kings in name only because they were elected, and they were responsive and responsible to the people. And this extraordinary thing, Thomas Jefferson here, and this is from a letter that Jefferson wrote on September 5th, 1816, to Samuel Kercheval. He said, "No other depositories of power have ever yet been found which did not end in converting to their own profit the earnings of those committed to their charge." In other words, no other form of government in history has failed to be corrupted by wealth. He says, "George III, in execution of the trust confided to him, has within his own day loaded the inhabitants of Great Britain with debts equal to the whole fee simple of the value of their island. And under pretext of governing it..." That's interesting. George III. Right now, the George who's president of the United States is the third George to be president of the United States. "Anyhow, has loaded the inhabitants of Great Britain with debts equal to the whole fee simple value of their island, and under pretext of governing it, has alienated its whole soil to creditors who would lend money to be lavished on priests, pensions, plunder, and perpetual war. This would not have been so," Jefferson said, "had the people retained organized means of acting on their agents. In this example, then, let us read the lesson for ourselves and not go and do likewise as did England." Now, John Adams, 11 years before he died, wrote a letter to his friend John Taylor in which he said, remember, this is John Adams, the guy who passed the Alien and Sedition Act, who didn't believe in democracy, didn't believe democracy was really viable. He thought we should have a variation on aristocracy and feudalism, that the wealthy and powerful should run things. John Adams, in a letter to John Taylor, wrote, quote, "Remember, democracy never lasts long. It soon wastes, exhausts, and murders itself. There never was a democracy yet that did not commit suicide," end quote. John Adams, the leader of the Federalists, who reinvented themselves as the Whigs and then reinvented themselves as the modern-day Republicans, who is being held up with his new biography by the conservative historians as the example of a noble president for the United States. But in a letter to John Adams, on January 11th, 1816, Thomas Jefferson took him on. He said, and I quote, "That same light from our West, that light of democracy, seems to have spread and illuminated the very engines employed to extinguish it. It has given them a glimmering of their rights and their power." So he was talking about the French Revolution and the spreading of democracy across Europe. He continued, "The idea of representative government has taken root and growth among them. Their masters feel it and are saving themselves by timely offers of this modification of their powers. Belgium, Prussia, Poland, Lombardy, etc. are now offering a representative organization. Elusive probably at first, but it will grow into power in the end. Opinion is power, and that opinion will come. Even France will yet attain representative government. The idea is rooted." I'll share the rest of this with you right after the break. This is a great quote. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. You're in the Truth Zone. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com or The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation?
The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Oh, man, this milk smells bad. Oh, it tastes funny, too.
Now that's a bad decision. Fortunately, buying a GM-certified used vehicle that's fully reconditioned with a comprehensive limited warranty is always a good decision. GM-certified used vehicles. The right way, the right car. Qualified buyers get 3.9% APR financing on select GM-certified used vehicles from participating Chevrolet, Pontiac, Oldsmobile, Buick, and GMC dealers. Visit GMCertified.com for details.
So you've graduated from college, got a new job, a new place to live, even a new dog, but you're still paying the same old high-interest student loans. Well, we can help. Just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE, anytime, 24-7. We're College Loan Corporation, and we're dedicated to helping you refinance your college loans with interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest rates in nearly 40 years. Get on with your new life and call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
She is. Thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really? Mm-hmm.
Fantila is like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Fantila.
You know everything. I should have watched MSNBC.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need's a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
Bill in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, posting on our message board.
The doorbell rang and I answered the door just as I finished posting how fed up I am with Bush. What a surprise. The guy standing in front of my door was very Republican look about him. His first words to me were, "Hi, I am your Republican precinct captain." Boy, has this guy got the wrong address, I said to myself. But not before I made it known to him that I consider Bush a menace to America. He started squirming and glancing around the front of my house. Our junkie responds. He says, "I remember when the only people we had to worry about meeting on our doorsteps were Jehovah's Witness crusaders. Now we have right-wingers. That's really scary." How to scare off door-to-door Republican visitors. And Klaus adds, "Well, answering the door naked can have the desired effect."
For Christ's sake, will you cover yourself?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Exposing the con in conservative. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. just wrapping up this quote, this January 11, 1816 letter from Thomas Jefferson to John Adams. And he said, he's talking about democracy. And this is after Adams says democracy always commits suicide. Jefferson says, no, sorry, you got it wrong, buddy. And he goes on to say, he says, you observe it makes the basis of every constitution which has been demanded or offered, or of that demanded by their Senate and offered by Bonaparte and Louis XVI, or the 18th, rather. Then he goes on to say, the idea then is now rooted and will be established, although rivers of blood may yet flow between them and their object, them being the Europeans, and their object being democracy. He says, I see no other principle on which Europe can ever again settle down in lasting peace. Democracy. Just a couple of housekeeping things here. I had mentioned on Friday that I would call Sirius satellite radio system and find out why Sirius Stream 145, Sirius Left, which carries this program and other programs from this network, was being interrupted by sports. I did. I called Jay Clark, I believe, one of the vice presidents there. He referred me to the guy who was in charge of programming. I don't have his name right in front of me. I don't have my notes from that conversation. But he basically said that, yes, they had done that, and they had picked up some sports products. They've got some channels that they're bringing online. They don't have them yet. He said eventually, presumably being, you know, fairly soon, weeks, months, it will not happen at all. He said they're going to spread them around some other channels, so it won't happen as often here. I said, you know, so one of my callers said that sports was preempting Sirius Left but not Sirius Right. And he said, well, it should be that they're both being preempted. He said, I'll look into that. And he said, but the bottom line is that, you know, his apologies and that this is not something that is going to be a long-term thing. So that's the word that I got. One quick question for those of you out there. I was, in working on this chapter on democracy for this book this weekend, I came across a statistic that astounded me. I don't remember the percentage that it said of eligible voters who voted in the 2000 election. My recollection was 57%. But it said that in the 1960 election, Richard Nixon versus John F. Kennedy, 95% of eligible voters voted. If anybody can find easily a website where those actual stats are available, please let me know. Drop into our chat room, post it on our message board, send me an email, tom@tomhartman.com. I want to track that down. I'd like to do a show about that and need some more information. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, the No Spoon Feeding Zone.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Doug, listening to you sing Back on the Saddle Again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time.
I think that was very nice.
I'm back in the saddle again.
There's a certain pumpkin patch when charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, doggy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Iraqi insurgents hiding in a date palm grove shot down a Chinook helicopter carrying dozens of soldiers heading for home leave Sunday, killing 16 and wounding 20 in the deadliest strike against U.S. forces since they invaded Iraq in March. Three other Americans were killed in separate attacks Sunday, including one 1st Armored Division soldier in Baghdad and two U.S. civilians working for the Army Corps of Engineers in Fallujah. All three were victims of roadside bombs, the military said. Sunday's death toll was the highest for American troops since March 23rd, and the attack represented a major escalation against the U.S.-led coalition. President Bush refused to personally comment on the attacks. He spent the day out of public view, a down day between fundraising appearances Saturday and Monday. President Bush is losing public support for his war and economic policies, according to a new poll, which for the first time shows that a majority of Americans disapprove of his handling of Iraq. A slim majority, 51%, disapprove of his Iraq policy, while 47% approve, according to the ABC News Washington Post poll released Sunday. Most Americans, 54%, continue to believe that the Iraq war was worth fighting, but that's down from 70% in April. A new high, 62%, say the level of U.S. casualties is unacceptable. Fewer than 1 in 10 Americans say Bush has made the nation more prosperous, while 58%, a new high, say the president fails to understand their problems. Saddam Hussein refused to order a counterattack against U.S. troops in March because he was convinced that he could avoid or survive a land invasion, according to former Deputy Prime Minister Tariq Aziz. He also said Iraq did not possess chemical, biological, or nuclear weapons on the eve of the war, a prime justification for a U.S. invasion of Iraq. More after this.
Military veterans deserve better. They must wait endlessly for basic health care from the Department of Veterans Affairs. If you or a military veteran you know is one of the many heroes waiting for VA health care, the American Legion wants to tell your story to your elected officials in Washington, D.C. Call toll-free 1-866-539-2509 or visit www.legion.org today. The number again, 1-866-539-2509. We'll tell your story where it matters.
A Polish undertaker was caught with his hearse packed with illegal cigarettes on Friday, Polish customs officers said. According to the report, a Pole from a local funeral firm was returning from neighboring Ukraine, where he said he had taken a cadaver. But customs officers searched the vehicle and found 3,200 cigarette packs hidden in secret compartments in the hearse. Gives a whole new meaning to the term coffin nails. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Does Burger King have a new fire grilled chicken baguette sandwich waiting for you? Unfortunately, no. Each one is freshly made to order without waiting for anyone. Like our Santa Fe chicken baguette with juicy fire-grilled chicken, fire-roasted peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on the fresh-baked baguette, all with only 5 grams of fat. Order your own Santa Fe chicken baguette from Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
Remember the glorious promises of globalization? CEOs, politicians of both parties, and media pundits all joined in the hallelujah chorus to proclaim that corporate-driven, laissez-faire globalization was the answer for all the world's ills. If only all the nations, especially those with rich resources to exploit, would open up to foreign ownership, forego government regulation of business, accept the stringent financial medicine of the IMF and World Bank, and privatize their economies, then the omniscient power of the global marketplace would shine its radiant light everywhere, and even the poorest villager would own a Lexus. It was, of course, a bottle of global snake oil, sold by the flim-flammers of the prosperous world and willingly swallowed by get-rich-quick rulers of the third world. Bolivia offers a peek at reality. 20 years ago, the elite corporate-oriented leaders of this poor South American nation rushed to the promises of the flim-flammers, led by the U.S. They sold off the nation's public assets, opened their arms wide to foreign investors, and waited for prosperity to flow. 20 years later, unemployment is rampant, economic growth is in the ditch, and there's now more poverty than before the magic of globalization was waved into the country, leaving Bolivians as the poorest people in South America, with a per capita income of under $950 a year. Unsurprisingly, the people of Bolivia are now in open revolt. not merely against their U.S.-hugging millionaire president whom they have now booted from office, but especially against the exploitative policies of corporate globalization, and specifically against U.S. corporations that are in league with the elites. This is Jim Hightower saying, people worldwide are learning the hard way that globalization is just another word for economic exploitation and corporate domination, and they're refusing to swallow any more of the global owning.
If you had the chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued
by them. I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
Are you kidding? I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in the American way from coast to coast. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Broadcasting live coast to coast and border to border, bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle and defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Boy, it's amazing the power of online interactivity. One of the folks in our chat room, Captain Jingo One said I should go to uselectionatlas.org for the information I was asking about the 1960 elections. And sure enough, there it was, broken down state by state. The national average was 62.8% of registered voters turned out. So that article that I had found over the weekend was wrong. I didn't think it could have been right, but it was an authoritative, or it seemed to be an authoritative source. So always good to double check, and always great to have our chat room. You can get there by going to tomhartman.com and clicking on the chat button, and it will take you to a CompuServe form. You push chat. Anyhow, we've got there is so much in the news today. We have the stuff that seems to be maybe kind of, is that fluff? Is it small? Is it, you know, a big deal or not? For example, this Reagan movie. Here we've got the former Enron lobbyist and now Republican National Committee Chairman Ed Gillespie pushing the president of CBS to get historians to review this miniseries, The Reagans. He says if they don't get the stamp of approval from historians, now which historians, of course, I mean, it's like, you know, history is one of those things that, as Thomas Jefferson said of the United States Constitution after John Marshall in 1803 in the Mabry versus Madison case ruled that the Supreme Court had the right and the power to overrule the federal legislature, it said, it has become a thing of wax. You could say the same about history. And, you know, I mean, you ask five different historians, you get five different stories. Anyhow, Ed Gillespie wants Republican historians, presumably, to review the Reagans. And if it doesn't meet their approval, he wants CBS to have a disclaimer on it. He hasn't, however, suggested they should do the same thing about the Jessica Lynch TV movie coming up. Specifically, they're complaining about the fact that in the script, Nancy urges Ron to support AIDS efforts, and Ron replies, them that live in sin shall die in sin. He actually said something very much like that. It was just that it was three sentences long instead of one, so they condensed it. The Republicans say, well, he never said that. Well, no, he didn't say that. He said something actually even a little bit more offensive than that, but it was three sentences long. I don't have it in front of me here, but the other day Paul Begala laid it out on Crossfire. That was excellent. The film is coming out while Reagan suffers from Alzheimer's. They think that that's, like, disrespectful, but they did, you know, was anybody yelling when the Warts and All TV movie came out about Jackie Kennedy Onassis when she was an elderly woman? No. No. These right-wingers have when their ox is gored, they yell and scream, and they do it loudly, and they do it emphatically. And you know, people on the left, they say, hey, you know, we can live together. We can live in peace. We can put up with this stuff. And you got this whole contingent of the loony right taking part in this. There's a website devoted to it. You got Bill O'Reilly getting into the act. You got Newsmax, you know, that news website whose advertisers will insert spyware into your computer in their classic make-a-buck-off-anything style. They're promoting sales of Ronald Reagan mugs. CBS is having some troubles, too. I mean, you know, the blowback from this thing is actually causing them to some problems. The lead actor isn't going to go on TV. You know, he doesn't want to get attacked, presumably. The editors dropped out, leaving the CBS executives to cut the movie themselves, to edit the movie. It's gone through three edits, at least. Apparently, that controversial AIDS line has been cut, as well as footage of young Ronald Reagan Jr. doing a ballet. The movie really concentrates on the couple's love affair. Every single fact has been checked by at least two sources. The dialogue is what is upsetting Reagan worshippers. It's a warts and all portrayal, or you could say a fair and balanced portrayal, and they don't like that. It even credits Reagan for ending the Cold War, which, of course, the Catholic Church claims it did. The Pope has claimed that the Catholic Church is the entity that led to the end of the Soviet Union. I was in Russia before and after the fall of the Soviet Union. In fact, when the wall in East Berlin came down, I was in Hungary. I was in Budapest, and I'd been in East Berlin before the wall came down, and I've certainly been there many times since then. In fact, by the way, just an FYI. On Thursday and Monday, this coming Thursday and next Monday, we'll be playing a best-of program. And on Friday, Rama Schneider will be filling in for me because I will be back in Germany this coming weekend. But anyhow, you know, they're saying that Ronald Reagan ended the Cold War. I mean, the CIA during the Jimmy Carter administration predicted that the Soviet Union was going to collapse, that they were bankrupt. They were bankrupt. And the conservatives love to say, oh, Ronald Reagan, he put the Soviets out of business. No, the Soviets put themselves out of business. Sorry. But anyhow, you bring up any cracks on the right wing's idols, and you get charged with blasphemy. This is like a religion, you know, this Reagan worship. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, if you have thoughts on this or any of the other news of the day. We've got a bunch of other stuff going on that I want to get into as time goes on. 1-800-825-5937, our number. And Pat in Ohio is on the line. Pat, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, well, the Reagan thing reminds me of the senile old grandfather that's worth millions. And all the relatives gather at the house and they say, oh, this is what he said. No, this is what he said. I remember during the Reagan era when they would have these fantastic commercials, Morning in America, and the flags are flying, and everything is wonderful. And it would work, and people would vote for Reagan. And then after the election, all these right-wing jerks would come out and say, well, this is what you voted for. We did? I didn't realize we voted for that. You know, we were voting for all, you know, you understand what I'm saying?
The same thing happened in 2000, you know.
So what I'm saying is that Reagan, in my opinion, has absolutely as much substance today. I know this sounds cruel, as he did 20 years ago, though. He really has nothing to say, and other people, even though he's supposed to be the great communicator, all the other people who the handlers always told us what Reagan was saying and what he meant, even though he's supposed to be the great communicator.
Yeah, he was famous for what they called his gaffes.
So now they resent that they're whatever, their image is being manipulated another way. Well, that's just as fair as what they were doing, though.
Yeah, I see this as more of a religious thing almost. I mean, there is this icon. They don't. You know, you'll never hear conservatives talk about the Reagan recession. Remember the Reagan recession? It bit really hard. You'll never hear conservatives talk about the terrible recession that came about during the administration of George H.W. Bush as a consequence of the Reagan budget deficits. You'll never hear, you know, conservatives talk about the fact that Bill Clinton had to raise taxes in order to balance the budget finally and bring back economic stability and prosperity to America as a result of the damage that Reaganomics did to America. You don't hear it. You hear instead these mantras of half-truths and distortions and confusions. Yes, Reagan had in one of the years of his administration had the greatest economic activity in the last half of the century, other than this last quarter. Well, yeah, but he did it by borrowing money from our grandchildren and spending it all at once. I mean, that doesn't qualify, in my opinion, as any kind of legitimate, appropriate statesmanlike behavior. And
it's fairer to call it the Deaver administration.
Yeah, well, or the Bush administration. You know,
or the Bush administration. And no one wants to think about the Marines that got killed in Lebanon, Grenada. Did I say Lebanon?
Yeah. Well, there is both.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. Grenada sounded so much louder, though, later on in the weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's too bad. But I think Reagan was just an image. And I mean, the people that believe that Reagan came ashore on Normandy and liberated the concentration camps are the same people that believe all the other nonsense.
Well, you know, Reagan believed that at one point. He told a foreign leader, I forget which one it was, that he was there and he helped film the liberation. But I think, you know, in fairness to Reagan, that he was senile at that point. A friend of mine is an attorney out in Los Angeles and participated in the deposition of Reagan during the Iran-Contra affair. And he said, I don't remember, something like 134 times. And she said, we had dinner, she and her husband and I, two or three days later, out in L.A., and she said, you know, I'm convinced he really didn't remember. She said, I don't think he's all there. And this was, you know, 2 years before the end of his administration. And he was just, you know, there was nobody home. I mean, you know, they announced he had Alzheimer's, like, you know, immediately after he was out of office. I think George Bush was running the country for, you know, at least four of Reagan's 8 years. And so, you know, we had 12 years of George, and now we've got 4 years of his son. So we're on the, we're working on 16 years of Bush's.
What a scary thought.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll talk to you later.
Yeah, thanks, Pat, for the call and for the comment. Ronald Reagan, you know, he seemed likable enough. He was certainly able to play the character of a likable person. And this new book that's out of Reagan's personal letters, I haven't read, frankly, but two people who I know and whose opinions I respect have read. And they say, you know, it seems that in his earlier years, he was a guy who actually had some substance to him. And, when did he begin to lose it? Who knows? So we've got the Reagan thing. We've got the Kathleen Parker thing. You know, this right-wing columnist, Kathleen Parker, she quoted a senior official as saying, these bastards like Clark and Kerry and that incipient-ass Dean and Gephardt and Kucinich and that absolute mental midget Sharpton race baiter should all be lined up and shot. And it got published, and it was out on the Internet. And then she changed the shot to slapped. You know, it's like, you know, hypocrisy alert. The RNC now is demanding that CBS put a disclaimer saying that the factually checked movie can't claim to be accurate, but a right-wing columnist can nakedly change the real words out of a real person's mouth and no one would ever know if BuzzFlash hadn't been vigilant enough to catch it. Thanks, BuzzFlash. I mean, journalistic integrity is lost on the right. It's just lost. They're notoriously lazy with their sources. It's me. And, you know, now Clear Channel with these three morning DJs throwing things at bicyclists. I don't know. I'm not sure you can indict an entire company for that. But, boy, those guys should be. That's a problem. But let's get into some news of more substance after this short break. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network, the true people's radio. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Baguette Country. Introducing the Santa Fe Fire Grilled Chicken Baguette Sandwich from Burger King. A juicy breast of fire-grilled chicken, sweet peppers and onions, and a hearty fire-roasted tomato sauce on our new fresh-baked bread. Made to order with only 5 grams of fat. The new Santa Fe Chicken Baguette. Burger King. Come on over. The fire's ready. Not a low-sodium food. For complete nutritional info, visit BurgerKing.com.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
So you've graduated from college, got a new job, a new place to live, even a new dog, but you're still paying the same old high-interest student loans. Well, we can help. Just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE, anytime, 24-7. We're College Loan Corporation, and we're dedicated to helping you refinance your college loans with interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest rates in nearly 40 years. Get on with your new life and call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now, 1-800-865-8449.
Tune into IE America Radio Network weekdays for the best in progressive talk radio. The Tom Hartman Show.
That's the Tom Hartman Program right here on the IE America Radio Network.
The Marianne Williamson Show.
Hi, everybody. I'm so happy to be here today. I'm glad you're with me. I will be on every Monday through Friday afternoon from 3 to 5 p.m.
Family Talk.
This is Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera.
The All-American Talk Radio Show.
All-American Talk Radio with Peter B. Collins and Peter Lawford.
The Mike Malloy Show.
I know I have a reputation of being fiery, hard-edged, passionate, outspoken, opinionated, and sometimes explosive. And that reputation is well-deserved because I am. I'm a liberal with a microphone, and that makes me dangerous.
For more information on these shows and other shows, or to listen live, visit us on the web at ieamericaradio.com.
I would like to see a law that says you, your organs automatically get donated unless you say no.
All right, Richie, have you got an organ donor specification?
No.
Why?
Because I don't want them taking me before I'm dead.
In Richie's case, what good would most of those organs be?
Certainly won't be going for his brain. Or they might, because it's never been used.
You might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
On the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison instead of right-wing think tanks in the RNC. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937, and Stanley's on the line in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, Stanley, how are you today?
Hi, Tom. Great, thanks.
What's on your mind?
Well, early yesterday morning, I logged on to the New York Times website and read the headline of the chopper shoot down and read the article, and went away and did a bit of work and came back 50 minutes later after checking the Washington Post and I forget one other, the L.A. Times. And it was a Reuters wire story. And there was, and about the third paragraph, it started with journalists were turned away and their film was confiscated. And in the Post and the L.A. Times, that paragraph was missing. I went back to the New York Times and pulled the story down again, and it was missing from there as well. And I just
incredible.
Thought, yeah, I just thought, I'll send those to you if you'd like, the two different stories, but I just thought, geez, you know, I was, it really kind of spoiled my day.
You know who to send them to would be editor at commondreams.org and editor at buzzflash.com.
Okay, I sent them to Buzzflash, I sent them to Fair, and I sent them to Bart Cop. And
yeah,
I've not seen them pop back up, but I just, you know, I just really, like, okay, the BBC, but where do we get our news?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really quite remarkable. Is there any evidence that the story was changed because the story wasn't factual?
Well, there wasn't a correction. You know,
yeah.
I mean, when I didn't find it in the other two stories, I thought, well, here's a scrub. The DOD is going to scrub this. And I finished what I was doing and went back, and sure enough, it was gone. I mean, and what I did is I started at the top of the page and copied all of the index items. And so what I have is their content emailed to myself, and it's two different stories.
Incredible. That's just incredible. You might want to send a letter to the editor of the paper also saying, you know, what happened? It would be really interesting to find out what kind of response you get.
Yeah, that's a very good idea. Okay, Tom, that's it, and thanks for the show.
Yeah, Stanley, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
You bet. Go on.
You have George Orwell's Ghost revisits us. That's a shocker, Stanley. That's amazing. This weekend, and speaking of this chopper story, this weekend marked the six-month anniversary of George Bush's aircraft carrier declaration. You know, I don't understand why the media keeps saying that he landed on an aircraft carrier. I suppose it's like saying if you fly from New York to Los Angeles, you landed in Los Angeles, but it always implies that he was somehow flying that airplane. I guess the pilot did let him take the stick for a few minutes while they were in flight, but he was chauffeured onto an aircraft carrier and got out and waddled around. And anyhow, this weekend marked the six-month anniversary of President Bush's aircraft carrier declaration that, quote, major combat operations in Iraq have ended. End quote. As the New York Times Magazine cover story says, the lack of clear planning by the White House is now taking a deadly toll. Quote, it is becoming painfully clear, the New York Times writes, that the American plan, if it can even be dignified with the name, for dealing with post-war Iraq, was flawed in its conception and ineptly carried out. The Washington Post reports, for his part, President Bush, quote, largely ignored the death toll in Iraq this weekend, quote, referring specifically to Iraq only once in four speeches totaling 72 minutes, end quote. This is such a tragedy, and it could have been prevented, and it still can be fixed if this administration was just willing to say, okay, to the UN, we'll let you have the oil, and we'll let you divide up the corporations in Iraq. We'll see. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
wildlife experts try to decipher the mystery behind a molecule that's killing animals in parts of North America. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A particularly unusual disease is infecting herds of deer and elk across the United States and Canada. It's called chronic wasting disease, and it's caused by a lifeless molecule, not a virus or bacteria. The molecule is an abnormal protein. It induces similar molecules in an infected animal to take the same form. The copycats will slowly break down the victim's nervous system, and ultimately, they will destroy its brain. Chronic wasting disease is commonly known as CWD, and it's a problem in 9 states and 2 provinces. It was first seen in the wild in the 1980s in Colorado and Wyoming. Relatively few animals were infected, and they lived in herds that were widely dispersed across the landscape. But last year, the disease showed up in southwestern Wisconsin, and that unnerved a lot of people. CWD had moved into a part of the country where deer are numerous and herds are concentrated. That raises the risk that the disease could start spreading more rapidly. Mike Samuel is an ecologist who works in the Wildlife Research Unit of the University of Wisconsin in Madison. He's working with state and federal authorities to study CWD, and he says the mystery begins with the abnormal protein molecule.
It's not alive. I mean, it's not cellular. It's not like a bacteria or a virus. It doesn't have any of the functions that we think of associated with life in terms of excretion and respiration and all those kind of typical things that you learn in biology.
Samuel says the way this molecule moves from animal to animal is still unclear. He says that has to be understood to determine what can be done to limit the impact of chronic wasting disease on wildlife. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk. Not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune into Animal Talk this Sunday.
Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're gonna kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Come on!
I'm Michael.
I'm Ellen.
And we're the Cooking Couple.
Join us every Sunday from noon to 2 Eastern Time right here for the Cooking Couple Show.
Where we serve you food with attitude plus a heap and helping of humor. It's all about food, family, and fun.
So tune in every Sunday from noon to 2 for nutrition, fitness, innovative products, consumer tips, and entertainment options for the whole family.
It's the Cooking Couple Show. And when the Cooking Couple cook, we do it on all 4 burners.
It's food with attitude.
Chop suey, chow mein, young one, tofu, and you.
Best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Conflicts of global corporate interest. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Boy, in our chat room, one of the folks had to scroll back up to it to figure out who it was, made the comment that nobody has ever successfully fought a war against insurgents. And I thought, well, that's interesting. Are you sure? And so there's this debate going on, this discussion about, well, you know, all these different cases, I mean, from the Irish on. And if what's going on in Iraq is a war of insurgency, that is to say, local Iraqis rising up and saying, no, we don't want this, then we've got a big problem. And because, you know, you keep hearing the administration say, oh, you know, it's It's foreign terrorists. But to the best of my knowledge, they haven't arrested or found or displayed the bodies or the ID of any, and they would be a great trophy if they were to be found. So you would think that it would be in the, all over the news of, say, oh, here's somebody who came in from Iran to blow up an American convoy. Or here's somebody who came in from Syria. Or here's a Saudi citizen. Haven't seen any of them. So now the story is, well, this is being organized by Saddam Hussein. He's a bad guy, and he's hiding out near Tikrit, and so we're going to lock down that area. And you know, but if it turns out, as it is increasingly looking like, that this is an actual insurgency, that is to say, the local civilian citizens are saying, we don't want our businesses being sold off, we don't want our oil being taken, and we don't want our country occupied. Thank you very much. You know, we're pleased to get rid of the dictator, but we don't want to trade in that one for a new one who's not even one of our people. If that's what's going on, we are in a whole heap of trouble. And I am astounded that this question has not been asked more often. I mean, we had Rumsfeld this weekend saying on television, on the weekend news programs, that the Iraqis are overwhelmingly in favor of the coalition being there. And yet we have the Zoghbi poll that contradicts that. That says that more than two-thirds of them want us out within the year. So it's a very, very dangerous time. The Sydney Morning Herald, this was a couple days ago, reports a former Pentagon officer turned whistleblower says a group of hawks in the Bush administration, including Vice President Dick Cheney, is running a shadow foreign policy, contravening a Washington's official line. Is this administration schizophrenic or is it at war with itself? Or both. I suppose you could say schizophrenia is a... or maybe it has multiple personality disorder. Karen Kwiatkowski, a former lieutenant colonel in the Air Force and Middle East specialist for neoconservative icon Douglas Feith at the Pentagon, said, quote, key governmental areas of neoconservative concern were politically staffed, end quote. She said pursuit of national security decisions often bypassed, quote, civil service and active duty military professionals, end quote, and was handled instead by political appointees who shared common ideological ties. I'm sharing you this from the Progress Report from the American Center for American Progress. Her analysis is consistent with a Knight Ritter analysis in which, quote, both friends and critics of the administration agree that the contrasting remarks from Bush and his vice president reflect the rival views and crippling schisms dividing the administration's senior counsels. It's like, not only does the not, this isn't even the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. This is, the left hand is doing one thing, the right hand's doing something else, and they are different, and they are opposed. I mean, you know, the famous example is Cheney and Rumsfeld versus Colin Powell. As one senior official said, it's not about tactics, it's about ideology. Ideology. The corporation's gone wild. This is bizarre. Using the deteriorating security situation in Iraq as cover, the Bush administration announced it was extending Halliburton's $2 billion no-bid contract while indefinitely postponing two competitively bid contracts. The administration also shockingly claimed that rebuilding, quote, will cost twice as much as the government has anticipated, end quote. The move highlights just how much of a feeding frenzy Iraq has become for private corporations with close ties to the White House. The latest Harper's Magazine writes that although, quote, as much as one-third of the rapidly expanding cost of the Iraqi war is going into private U.S. bank accounts, end quote, there is virtually no accountability or oversight. Somebody on our message board at TomHartmann.com the radio show message board had asked about hazard duties pay. The progress report reports that this week's Newsweek magazine says, quote, one reason U.S. taxpayers are forking over top dollar to have private U.S. contractors in Iraq is that much of what companies are charging for is hazardous duty. At major engineering companies, that means 45% extra, taking engineers up to nearly $900 for a 10-hour workday. Halliburton is paying their engineers $900 a day. Hazardous duty pay. While private contractors soak up tax dollars and hazard pay, however, the White House has tried to cut hazard pay for American soldiers actually in harm's way and fighting the war. The Army Times wrote in June that, quote, the Bush administration announced that on October 1st it wants to roll back recent modest increases in monthly imminent danger pay from $225 to $150 and family separation allowance from $250 to $100, presumably this is per month, for troops getting shot at in combat zones. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937, and Dan in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Dan, how you doing today? What's on your mind?
Good. How are you doing, Tom?
I am alive and kicking.
All right. Well, I just wanted to call because I had this theory a long time ago, but I never shared it with radio or anything like that. It's drug use and patriotism, and I think that patriotism is a lot like drug use. At 9/11, we had like a severe injury, kind of like a back injury. So what we decided to do is prescribe ourselves patriotism, which worked. But after a while, we became a little bit more addicted to it. So all of a sudden, we don't appear like who we were supposed to be. We lose our freedom of speech and our other certain freedoms. Our friends don't recognize us, like France and Germany. And
well, it's not just France and Germany. I mean, all over the planet.
Yeah, absolutely. So our friends don't recognize us. Our family doesn't recognize us, which are Americans everywhere. And I think it's something we have to go to rehab on. I think patriotism is a good thing, but I think it can get pretty far.
Well, what do you mean when you say patriotism, Dan?
I think whenever someone says, especially to a Democrat, I think you what I was told was, I think you liberals enjoy it too much that this helicopter went down. Why aren't you patriotic or supporting the troops fully or even supporting the president fully? That's when I get like intimations of, you know, this patriotism thing can go a little bit too far.
Yeah, that's jingoism. Patriotism is love of country.
Uh-huh.
And I think what you're describing is manipulation for the manipulation of people for political purposes by the party in power.
Okay.
And it's certainly not limited to the Republicans. I mean, certainly LBJ did the same thing during the Vietnam War.
Absolutely.
when he was running the show.
Yeah.
But good point. An interesting point, in fact. Dan, thanks for calling and sharing that with us. I appreciate it. Patriotism is a drug. Well, nationalism maybe is a drug, yeah. I just want to share a real quick clip with you here. Franklin Roosevelt suggested that there are four freedoms that all people should enjoy. The first was freedom of speech. The second was freedom to worship. And here is his comment on the third and fourth freedoms. And just consider, I mean, think of the political positions right now of, for example, Howard Dean or Dennis Kucinich, and how much heat they are taking in the American press for being doves, for being in favor of peace. How dare they? Right? This is playing off what Dan was talking about. Here is the man who prosecuted World War II, who took on Adolf Hitler face to face and backed him down. Here's Franklin Delano Roosevelt talking about the third and fourth of the four freedoms that all humans have a right to.
The third is freedom from want.
Freedom from want.
Which translated into world terms means economic understandings which will secure to every nation a healthy peacetime life for its inhabitants everywhere in the world.
What? Everybody should have a decent standard of living? Oh, no, we can't have that.
The fourth.
And here's the kicker, the fourth.
Is freedom from fear.
What, you don't want terror alerts, Mr. Roosevelt?
Which translated into world terms means a worldwide reduction of armaments to such a point and in such a thorough fashion that no nation will be in a position to commit an act of physical aggression against any neighbor anywhere in the world.
Holy cow.
Holy cow, he wants disarmament, international disarmament. Can you imagine a president of the United States? 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. Caesar in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Caesar, how are you?
Oh, good, Tom. So, you know, one thing that I'm an ex-Vietnam vet and everything, and one thing that always has bothered me with this Jessica Lynch is, why did she get a bronze medal for being inept? You know, for losing their way and then getting,
Well, I don't think she was driving the trucks.
Are all our soldiers that are getting killed right now, are they getting at least bronze medals? You know.
Frankly, I don't know, Caesar, but, you know, I'm not sure that you could.
I just think it's pretty pathetic, you know.
I have a question for you. First of all, I'm not sure that Jessica Lynch was driving the truck, so I don't think that we can accuse her of necessarily being inept. She was just there.
Well, why did she get a bronze medal?
That's my question to you.
That's what it takes. Well, in order to get a bronze medal in Vietnam, first of all, you'd have to have at least to get a combat medal, you have to gotten in there. You have to been there 9 months. Then, if you were to save somebody's life or done something, you know, above and beyond, usually you got commendation, but, your CO could have recommended you for a bronze medal. But, I mean, to get a bronze medal because you were a prisoner of war for a week or 2 weeks, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. You know?
Interesting. Well, I'm not as well versed on military culture as you are, Caesar, so I'll take your word for it. Thanks for the call, and I appreciate the comment. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, Mike in Powder Springs, Georgia, is on the line. Hey, Mike, how you doing? Michael?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Okay. I was just listening to some of your comments about Jessica Lynch and Reagan, and I understand you're trying to draw some parallels between the two. And whether some of the story is fiction or not. Is that correct?
Well, to the extent that I was, what I said was, if the RNC is so concerned about the factual accuracy of biographies, where were they when the one on Jackie Onassis was done? Mm-hmm. Where are they on the one on Jessica Lynch? And, you know, why aren't those standards being applied to the Reagan one?
Out of curiosity, where in the Jessica Lynch story do you find fallacy or false statements?
Well, I'm not suggesting there's fallacies or false statements in any of them. What I'm saying is that the RNC, Ed Gillespie, the former Enron lobbyist who is now the head of the Republican National Committee,
we're going to address facts here.
Has said that he believes that this movie should be vetted by historians that he approves of before it's run, or it should have a disclaimer. And I'm wondering why isn't he suggesting that the Jessica Lynch movie should also be vetted by historians? I'm not asserting that either has factual inaccuracies in it.
Well, the Jessica Lynch story, that's kind of been the, a rallying cry for a lot of the left out there. They're all saying that it was a false or contrived story, and you know, the other hostages that were found just doesn't have a sexy ring as having a special operations mission. And let's take, what is it, Shoshana Johnson. Yeah, there are some inadequacies there with what's happening. But when you look at and you dig deep into the issue there, Jessica Lynch is on, disability for 80% for only 5 years. And she's returning to full duty. Shoshana has 30% for the rest of her life. If you want to look at that annuitized, who's going to get more over time?
Yeah.
Secondly, if you look at the Jessica Lynch story, the raid that...
What does this have to do with the Ronald Reagan movie?
It has everything to do. It has everything to do with facts. You're having
What does this have to do with Ed Gillespie saying that he wants historians to vet the Reagan movie, but he doesn't care if historians vet the Jessica Lynch movie?
Because apparently
that was my point.
Because apparently there's not so many misstatements within the Jessica Lynch story as there is in the Reagan story. When you have the own screenwriter who comes out and says, you know, he didn't say that. I just made that up because, well, it sounded good and kind of fit my political agenda.
Well, no, the screenwriter never said that. The sentence in dispute was they took three sentences Reagan said and boiled them down to one. But, you know, I get what you're saying, Mike, and appreciate it. Josh in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, hang on the line. We'll take you right after this break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Show. According to Abbas, immediately after Bush promised to speak with Sharon about the siege on Arafat, Bush said, quote, God told me to strike at Al-Qaeda, and I struck them. And then God instructed me to strike at Saddam, which I did. When God specifically whispers in someone's ear, I want you to go kill those people, and they go ahead and kill somebody, what do we do with those folks? We arrest them, they are jailed, in some instances, executed. We immediately identify them as crazy. You know, Ashcroft is going to say,
wait a second, George. God has been talking to me. God told me. Not you. God told me. These people are crazy.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
They're coming to take me away.
Hear that? Doug made his confession that he used hair color.
Yeah, I was expecting to make it the treatise of the last month. Aren't you guys sweet?
I would recommend sticking with one color, however. Each month, you know.
I
want to
see you try the afro stuff.
Yeah, right. I'm going to do that.
I decided that it is not the color of the hair, but the head that it stuck to that's important.
Doug Stephan's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Shake it up. Shake it up.
Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, and we have Josh in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania on the phone in the last couple minutes of the show here. Hey, Josh, how are you? What's up?
Hi there. How you doing?
Good.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm a first-time caller and only recently discovered your fine program and very inspirational words, and I really appreciate all that you're doing. But something that's kind of troubles me, and as I listen to your program, it kind of gets me thinking about it. I was speaking with my wife, who was born and raised outside of the United States. She's a Japanese citizen, and we were talking about cultural changes in Japan and the slow sort of growing pains that society sometimes face, and she has such a wonderful historical perspective on things. But, you know, and not being able to come up with an easy solution sometimes is inspirational as some of your words are, and some of the solutions that you offer. And I was remarking to my wife how I was so impressed with your program because it's offering answers and solutions, not so much just complaining about the problems. I think a lot of folks who are listening already know. But my question and my concern, I guess I should say, is how do you address this? You know, things have gone and to such a degree, things have kind of... things have kind of spiraled down to such a degree that we have a culture. I kind of feel like there's the whole culture of the United States and probably many other places around the world have, you know, reached such a low, or education is at such a, in some places, such a low point that getting people to even, they know there's a problem. They certainly feel the pain. They certainly suffer. But there's a sort of apathy that just seems to be, I don't know how to combat that. You know, I don't know how to, you know, how do you address just getting people to care? You
well, know, first of all, Josh, you have to notice that Americans have a cycle of political activity that follows the presidential election cycles. When there's not a presidential election in play, I mean, basically Americans are watching sports.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't judge how things are going to be a year from now by right now.
Right.
Number one. Number two, if you want to get people motivated, you have to, number one, wake them up to the reality of the situation. You know, the old, you can't diagnose a disease, you can't cure a disease before you diagnose it. And number two, offer them an alternative vision, a positive vision. We would like to see an America where the middle class is once again empowered, where workers are allowed to organize the same way corporations can organize, where health care is available as a basic right to all, where corporations haven't assumed control of the government. I mean, very straightforward things. I think just holding these visions out will do it. Josh, thanks for the call. I appreciate our program today, produced by Louise Hartman and Joe McPherson, and engineered in Detroit by Shar Jones. Thanks for joining us today. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place.
It's coming from the field, but this ain't exactly real. Or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Brendan was spending the afternoon helping me pick out furniture for the new place.
The ladies are doing a little furniture shopping, are they?
That's scary. I hope you didn't make any choices without a professional.
Beanbag chairs for everybody.
God help us. Bearskin rug.
I put the car in swinger, baby.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to Animal Talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to Animal Talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk.